Hey gang, welcome back. Episode 6, I think, of Zero Carb Journal. And as you know, I'm Matt, and thank you guys so much for listening and all your support and positive comments. I have been overwhelmed, to be honest, with all of the wonderful stories and support you guys are giving me, and it's been great for me. So thank you very much. Of course, I really hope that it's giving you guys something too, and hopefully you're learning along with me. So I'm going to look around and check my recording levels and stuff. And anyways, so today, well, let's see, it's morning. It's about 8:20 on a Saturday, and I am a little scattered. I've had quite a few ideas about how to do this. I was going to write out a, some kind of storyboard or dialogue, but I think I'm just going to freestyle it because I hadn't really come up with anything great. So, you know, a lot of you have been asking and eager to see a little bit about lifestyle, and I am going to do that today. But I'm not going to go walking around and do a day like that. I was going to, and I struggled with how I was going to do that. And it's just a mess out there right now, you guys. It's January 19th, 20th, maybe, I guess, today. And it's been pouring rain, and nothing's growing. Everything's muddy. And I just kept looking at what I was going to do to show you guys what it's like around here. And it would just be brown and dark. And I don't want to go out there and do fencing and just put the camera up there and show you an hour of fencing because I wouldn't be able to talk to you. So what I am going to do is I'm going to cut away here shortly, and I'm going to show you a bunch of photos as I tell you the story of what I've been doing here and what my life looks like now and those kinds of things. So first of all, it is Zero Carb Journal, and I do want to journal a little bit, and I want to kind of keep you guys appraised of how my progress is going and what my weeks are like. So it's been a week since I talked to you last, and I had a great week. I did get back to work. I am ahead of my customers, so it wasn't that much work yet, but I think next week I'll be down in their lane in the boat and in there full time. But I had a really, really wonderful time going in, doing actually a lot of consulting and design work, working in the engineering department at a desk that they set up for me there, and I felt really appreciated, and it was wonderful. So it felt great to get back. My energy was awesome. Zero carb, you know, that it was just so phenomenal to wake up, do my workout, go into work, and, you know, I worked till almost 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I got a little hungry, but I wasn't, you know, worried about it. I just was waiting till I was finished to come home and eat, and it was really easy to do. Actually went to the store on the way home, and that just feels so good after being fatigued and low energy when I was really ill there the last working period I had a few years ago. I was really struggling to put in hours. I would go in and be tired and work for a few hours and go have to eat a snack. And so that's a wonderful experience so far on Zero Carb is having that long, steady energy. You know, it felt great. And so I'm looking forward to getting back in and doing more physical work this next week, and we'll see how that goes as well. So the week was pretty uneventful in terms of food. I just kind of kept eating the same thing I've been eating, my meat cookies, my burned hamburgers. I did have a little bit of salmon here and there, but yesterday I thawed out a little bit of smoked salmon that was a gift from my friend a few weeks ago when he filled up my freezer. And this was different. He usually just does smoked salmon with a little bit of salt on it and smokes it plain. But this one had very light that I could see. I saw there was a couple red pepper flakes on top. I kind of picked some of them off, but it wasn't heavily coated at all. And I suspect he probably did maybe a salt and sugar brine, although I don't think so. He doesn't seem to do that. He's pretty minimalistic and isn't a sugar eater himself. So his wife has Crohn's, and so they avoid a lot of stuff as well. But I gotta tell you, I took a few bites of this. I didn't eat much. I probably ate 3 or 4 ounces yesterday, and it tasted good, but it didn't taste better. I didn't like the additional flavor after, you know, the I'm so adapted to eating with nothing on it that it wasn't like, ooh, that's really good. I miss that. Yum. It was like, ooh, a little, you know, it's kind of more like mouth fireworks, and not really in a good way. I was like, oh, that's a little spicy and a little bit of weird, different flavors. And that was okay. But I instantly could tell in my stomach it was burning. And I spent a couple hours kind of just, it wasn't terrible. I wasn't ill, but my stomach was. I could tell there was hot pepper flakes in there. I'm just super sensitive now, I guess is what I'd say. And then as the day progressed, it got kind of worse, and I had a little bit of a rough night last night, and not terrible again, but just I used the toilet a couple times. I had loose stools, and my body was seeming to want to get that out of there. Woke up in the middle of the night with some discomfort, so I'm a little tired right now. But you know, it wasn't the end of the world. I wouldn't, if I was somewhere where that was on the food and I would, you know, I would probably eat it anyway. I don't think it made me inflamed. I feel fine. We'll see how it goes in another day or two if my weight spikes up. But I could tell it was in discomfort, and I am that sensitive now. And that happened once before. It was many, many months ago when I was early in the experimentation stages, and I got a piece of my old favorite sausage. It was an all natural hot link or something, and I had the same experience where I could just really feel the spices in my stomach burning. Again, different, not the inflammation. I could just feel the heat from the spices all the way in through my tract, my GI tract, really, and it was uncomfortable, and I really didn't care for it. So live and learn, you know, it's pretty interesting to be so sensitive and to be so tuned in. And, again, I'm really enjoying that as well. So, yeah. So in terms of my journal and my week and my food, I'm still on track. I am still, keeping it to 2 pounds a day for the most part, although I ate 3 pounds yesterday in that salmon and, a little bit more here and there. My weight is low now and I'm about where I want to be. So, you know, I'm actually not hungry. When I was eating 4 pounds a day, I think I was pushing to eat more. I mean, I know I was, but I was, I kind of settled into that. And at that time I was using salt or more salt. And it was, you know, I dropped the salt about the same time I dropped my, consumption, my intake. And what I'm finding is that 1 pound in the morning and 1 pound, probably 1.5 pounds is I can't keep losing. I'm just about down as low as I want to be, so I have to up it. But what I'm saying is that I'm not really restricting. It just sort of naturally feels like how much I want to eat, and I seem to operate run really well on there. So I'm going to probably find out what my real true maintenance weight is sometime in the next few months, and what my real true maintenance intake is. I do want to gain some muscle, so I will work on that as well, but I'm excited to be all the way back into all my old pants and stuff, which I am now. So I probably shed an inch or maybe even a little more off my waist in the last month. And like I said, that isn't a goal as you see. I don't recommend you do this for body comp or weight loss in the early stages, but as I said before, once you're a year in or however long, when you're well adapted, it really becomes very easy. And that spare tire I had gained last January when I was still eating nuts and yogurt along and fruit along with my meat, and I had become inflamed and put that weight on in 12 pounds in a month or so. And of course, when I was inflamed, it would always go right to my belly as abdominal adiposity. So yeah, so I carried that around with me, and I'm excited to have gotten rid of it so easily. And so I'll probably up my intake from here. But the main gist of it is I'm feeling really good, and that amount of food I'm eating is suiting me well, and I don't feel like I'm really restricting. And I'll probably naturally land somewhere in the 2 to 3 pound range, I think, moving forward. No real intentions to mix it up. Really enjoying the ground beef. I'm enjoying my salmon and halibut as well, but not as often, and I haven't really wanted for anything else. So there's that. So, you know, the title of this one, or what I think the theme of this one is living simply on a zero carb diet or zero carb way of eating. And I am, you know, going to contrast that a little bit with what I used to do, and how, you know, I've been on this farm now for over 15 years. And I'm going to ask my little dog to go lie down. Good boy, Waylon. Thank you. Just want you to chill, bud. So, you know, I've been here for 15 years. Waylon, go outside, please. He wants to lick and make all the little grunts and noises, so I'm going to send him out. You know, I've been here for 15 years, and I have been pursuing what I have always considered sort of a simple life close to the land. I was really inspired by Gene Logsdon, agricultural author who's wonderful, and he's part of the sort of berry and, you know, those type of back to the land type of authors, as well as a book called The Self-Sufficient Life and How to Live It. And now I'm forgetting his name, but it's the Rosedale Books guy, and wonderful books. And I was, you know, greatly inspired by those as I became more interested in the agricultural life and a farming life close to the land. And so I've always been living what I considered a simple life. I've been doing I was always doing huge gardens and planting fruit trees and working up the land to support those habits and interests. But in the old days, prior to being here, prior to coming here, I had been, as I told you, on the road, snowboarding and surfing, and that led to a lot of time in different towns, traveling around. And I think I'll go back to that a little bit and talk about my lifestyle at that time. You know, I grew up, I graduated high school in 1988. So I was living in Seattle in 91 in the grunge era. And, you know, we were shopping at thrift stores and wearing funky diamond socks and, you know, old cardigans and all that stuff in the early 90s. And I carried that culture with me for quite a while into, you know, throughout the 90s. I was driving around. I had a Volkswagen bus for a long time, and I was traveling town to town talking about my little, at that time, small snowboard company and spreading the word. And I would have time to go into all the thrift stores in every town across the West, in Utah and in Montana and Wyoming and Idaho. And I was bringing home, you know, I always had, I always liked fashion and quality goods. I still do. And style. My brother likes to call me a curator. And so I was dragging home fancy old wool, Western wear and Filson and, you know, handmade goods that I would find for pennies on the dollar in these thrift stores all over the West. And I was into it, and I was collecting that stuff. And along with that, I was collecting musical instruments. And along with that, I was collecting, you know, not on purpose, but snowboards were such a part of my life. I had all my old snowboards from the 80s and early 90s. And, so I came to this farm, which has a pretty big house that I moved into, with a lot of baggage. And I'm going to say now, in hindsight, I was close to a hoarder. Not the horrible kind. You know, I didn't have stuff lying in the walls that you had to squeeze through. But I certainly had stuff. I had a big musical instrument collection. You know, I think I mentioned I recorded bands and I played in bands and I was on tour and doing those kinds of things during certain stages in my life. I did audio and sound and musical consultation for snowboard films. You can find me on IMDb and places like that, another one of the hats I wear. And so I always had reasons to collect this stuff. As a matter of fact, I'm recording right now on the last vestiges of what I have left, a nice microphone and some gear that makes my audio pretty good. But, you know, the house was full of vintage snowboards, stacks of them. I don't remember how many a few years ago. This is, you know, by the time I got to when I told you I hated myself in 2013 and 14, or the early stages of 14, before I started trying to find my fitness and rediscover myself and love myself, I had huge stacks of snowboards. I had a guitar and amplifier collection that was pretty cool. It was the envy of everybody for the most part. I had I'll brag a little bit or boast a little bit because I did love it, love that stuff. I had, you know, early 60s Telecaster and Stratocaster and a 62 Jazzmaster and P bass and you know, an old Gibson and a 61 Vox amp and all the Fender amps and the Marshall and, you know, the whole nine yards. I had a huge collection and it was filling up the house. And so were the snowboards and then the clothes that I had been collecting forever as I toured around. You know, I had all this old HBRC California ranch wear and Filson and, you know, whatever else, quality wool and natural, you know, domestically made goods that I could find. I was very into it. So that, you know, wasn't a very, it was weighing on me. And while it was still, you know, playing music, I still enjoy, although I haven't done much of it. But I certainly was kind of, that was it, at odds with what I was seeing myself doing in the farming life. And then as I got into farming life, you know, I got all the canning gear. And I got a little wheat mill and I was growing wheat and I had all of the kitchen gadgets, of course. You know, I became a real foodie as I built my stoves. I got more into smoking meats and cooking. You know, I always, like I mentioned before, had sourdough on the counter every day. I would make a loaf of sourdough. That was part of what I considered my simple life. And these things seem like it's sort of disparate, you know, disparate, like talking about the collections and the cooking. But what I'm trying to get at is I had an enormous amount of stuff. You know, the kitchen was loaded, every gadget you can imagine, all the utensils. I loved and I liked quality stuff. So I'd go to the kitchen stores and I would get, you know, a nice Wusthof knife. And I was making good money through a lot of those times. And so I would, you know, have all the nice pans and I had a ton of stuff, lots and lots. So as I got to 2014 and I started to restructure myself and I started to look around, and before I really realized that I was going to downsize and make this move, I knew that it was time to get rid of that stuff. You know, well, part of it was that I was getting ill and my work was slowing down. And so the writing was on the wall financially. I didn't need to sell everything for money, but what I needed to do was, you know, find a simpler way of living that didn't require so much inputs. And I was paying all the mortgage myself in the big house for, you know, all that time. I had roommates once every now and then, but for the most part, I lived by myself. And so, you know, I was ready to downsize, and that was, I saw that coming. It wasn't that I wanted to get rid of the stuff for the money, but I wanted to get rid of the stuff because I saw that at some point I might not be able to keep the house. And I knew that, you know, if that were to happen in an emergency type situation, like, oh gosh, the house has to go on the market now, I would have had to take pennies on the dollar on all that gear. Because, you know, it's a lot of work to sell things for what they're worth, and taunt takes time. And so I was like, wow, I am going to get stuck here with, you know, a warehouse full of inventory, as it were, and no time to sell it, and it's all going to be a loss. So, and I was starting to pull back from work, so I got real motivated and started. You know, one of my daily goals that I put on my list was two things on eBay a day. And that started probably back in 2014 or 15. There's Pearl again. She likes to bark right when I start talking. You know, I did that. I'd already had a successful eBay account that I'd sold a lot of things through over the years as I was swapping out different guitars and stuff. And so I started selling everything. I started selling all my snowboards. I started selling all of my music gear. I started selling all of those clothes. And so in doing that, you know, I got pretty deep into the declutter. You might be familiar with the KonMari, you know, method of do I love it? It's gone. You know, if I don't, it's gone. Does it inspire passion in me? If it doesn't, it's gone. And I sold some things that inspired passion in me too. Some of the guitars, I just couldn't justify. They were worth so much money at this point. I had bought most of those guitars. I should clarify. I had bought like the Jazzmaster. I bought it in 1991, I think. You know, I think I got it for $600. It was a 1962 Jazzmaster in original condition. So most of those things represented a small investment when I purchased them, but they had grown to be worth a lot of money. That guitar was worth 10 times what I paid for it, at least. And I had many of them like that. So I couldn't justify sitting with a $6,000 guitar that I barely played. You know, I can play it, but it wasn't what I was doing. I was much more into farming. I was much more into growing things. I was getting into my fitness, and I was becoming more ill, and I had pulled back from playing out with my friend and his band, and I just said, I don't want to be on stage every weekend night for $100. And so I was really not using that stuff. So I started to declutter for those various reasons, and along the way I started to become pretty passionate about that. I really got excited about it. Now I do have one big collection, as you've seen, my records, and I allowed myself to keep those because I love them. And so you've seen a little bit of them. There's a whole lot of them. They're all there. That lines I'm looking at them now. They line kind of the whole wall of my shack here. And I got my two record players that form my desk. And, you know, I get a lot of pleasure out of those. And then they're kind of the last vestiges that if I ever needed to go for another year on eBay, I could probably live off of those and make, you know, and that was actually pretty useful when I was ill, selling off all my stuff. It bought me some time to make that transition. So, but decluttering, in general, has been really profound for me and led me to this much simpler life. And that really ties well into zero carb. Because as I made the transition to zero carb, you know, in the interim times when I was finding different ways of eating, you know, doing like a real low carb paleo and keto and those things, you know, obviously you're still, I was a foodie and I was still very interested in finding all the substitutes and doing all the cooking. So I still had all the gadgets and I was still interested in all the kitchen gadgets. As I became zero carb, I started looking at my kitchen stuff and just going, well, I don't need that. I don't need that. And, you know, like the last thing was down to the knives. And I said, you know, I had 8 or 9 nice knives, a big knife set for cutting vegetables, right? Mostly. And I went through it all and was like, geez, I really only use this one and sometimes this long one for cutting up, you know, a strip or loin or something like that. So, you know, I was able to pare down my kitchen from really a kitchen bigger than this whole place I live in now that was completely packed to the gills to where I'm sitting now, which, you know, I have these three bowls that you can't see, but they're right here. And couple knives on the rack behind me, and I've got this little tiny convection oven that's, you know, a little bigger than the toaster oven. I did buy a little commercial convection oven. It's sitting right here. And I have a little fridge about that big right underneath it. And I have a single burner cooktop over here with one cast iron pan sitting on it. And there's a grill outside, and of course my wood-fired cook stove, which I smoke meats inside of. Basically, it's a smoker in terms of the kitchen and, you know, the cooktop on there. So, you know, in terms of simplifying, I was able to pare things down to just a very, very small amount of stuff. I got rid of almost everything I kept, you know, one electric guitar, my bass, my two acoustic guitars, one my grandfather left to me, and my other favorite one. And I still have, you know, a ukulele and mandolin and, you know, kind of one of each of the things that I might pick up and play. But I don't have multiples. I just kept my favorites and not even the most valuable ones. The electric guitar I kept is one a friend made for me. It's really not worth anything from a financial standpoint, but it's worth everything to me, you know, personally, and it plays beautifully. And so, yeah, I sold a guitar that was worth more than any car I've ever owned, that did the same thing, that was my favorite of all time, and kept this one that means much more to me. So, that's been really profound. So let's talk about my day on Simple Living. That kind of gets you sort of to how I got downsized here and how I stuffed my life into this little box. And ZC was, you know, zero carb was very, very much a part of that. I don't think, you know, I was sort of eating transitionally when I moved up in here, and I did have a mixer here, and I was making keto cakes and, you know, whatever things, low carb breads and pizzas. But, you know, that's all gone now, and I'm much happier for it, and I wouldn't be able to do that without zero carb as a way of life. So a day in my life, you know, in the old days, was very, you know, let's just say prior to becoming zero carb, and somewhere in my transition stage. I should talk about the farm a little bit and my goals here. You know, I have been seeking self-sufficiency for a long time here. And so for many, many years, that meant large gardens, large canning jobs. You know, I'll put up pictures. I had enormous harvests. I had two canners going often during the summer and fall. And, you know, I would start with the early season radishes and things we make in pickles, and that would move into onions and cucumbers and tomatoes. And it wasn't all pickled stuff. I did a lot of pressure canning. I would be canning tomato sauce and even, you know, taco meat and beef and ham from my pigs, and, you know, trying to just stuff the larder so I could make it through the year without going to the store. That was my goal. I was really interested in that. I was really interested in providing all my own food, and not going shopping was something I was very proud of. So I thought that was a simple life. You know, I really was close to the land. I was in touch with the seasons. Those things are very important to me still. And, you know, but it was an enormous amount of work. And you'll see in these photos I'm putting up, you know, huge drying the garlic and splitting it up and putting the, you know, cloves back in and resprouting and drying the onions and tying them up and putting them in the basement and hanging them to dry. And I dug a root cellar and, you know, I would store the fruit, and there was always a big task to do, and I loved it. I mean, I'm not complaining, but it was a lot of work. And while I enjoyed it, it wasn't until I got away from it and got into zero carb that I look back and say, wow, I put so much time in that. You know, starting now in January, I would be out digging in the dirt and making new swales and new planting areas. I would be planting fruit trees, which I will probably continue to do. And along that way, you know, I got really into the concepts of permaculture, if you're familiar with that. And that's a system of design that is the brainchild of a genius man from Tasmania named Bill Mollison. I'm a huge fan, so influential on my life. And he, along with another book called A Pattern Language, which you may be familiar with, it's an architectural book by, I think, Christopher Alexander et al. That is, those books should be on, or Pattern Language should be on your coffee table. It is an amazing resource for sensible systems in life in general, seen through the eyes of how we live and where we live and what our living systems are like. And Bill Mollison sort of expanded on that and rolled those systems into, you know, permaculture is the idea of building a culture of permanence, that it includes both the systems for the earth and growing, as well as systems for people, care. He considers those things interwoven. And, you know, the real founding tenet of it is observing and looking to nature at systems that work and create resiliency and abundance in a natural system with no inputs. Once they're set up, they're self-sustaining. And, you know, if you look around, there's just obviously endless examples of that cycle in nature. Of course, we break it almost every time we get involved, even in our normal agriculture with tilling. And, you know, you can't, wheat doesn't just continue to grow for most people. They till and seed and sow and reap and, you know, return the land and all those things. So there's always inputs, and you're usually, it's a degrading system where the systems are constantly sort of losing function over time. So I'm very, very into permaculture, and along the way, you know, learned how to apply that to my land. So one of my biggest interests here in this land, and this is still really my primary goal, although it's now mostly focused on animal-based systems. In the past, I had mixed animal and agricultural systems, or growing plant-based systems. And, you know, I'll continue with some of that plant-based stuff because it dovetails with the animals, providing food for them. But the real key is, for me here on this land, is actually shaping the land through some, you know, high input, semi-destructive, but it's constructive inputs, to restore abundance and to, you know, instill resiliency and, the ability for the systems in the land to restore themselves and create an abundance here without inputs as I move forward. And so that includes things like perennial plantings, like fruit trees. And I have perennial wheat growing all over my property that reseeds itself and also grows back up from the roots most years, at least for a few cycles. I have tons of berry bushes. I have herbs, you know, and putting those in, you know, what's known in the permaculture world as a forest garden system, where you're really trying to mimic what happens in a forest, where you start from, you know, bare dirt and its grass comes in first, and you go to savanna, and, you know, then you start to have trees and you get all the understory. You get the vegetation layer, the herbaceous layer down low, and brushes and smaller trees and big trees and shade. And you get this system that, you know, works to stratify the layers and create abundance at all levels, and it's self-perpetuating in its cycle. And so the goal of a edible forest garden is to create those types of systems with edibles, with fruit trees and herbs and berries, and there are perennial vegetables. And along the way, you know, you shape the land. So I was able to get myself a excavator, and you build water retention systems in smart ways, so that rather than water running off the land and removing the topsoil and removing the nutrients, the water sits and settles and soaks into the land. You want it to move as slowly as possible and touch as many, you know, the abundance is in the edges where systems touch, where wetlands touch drylands and uplands touch lowlands and water touches dry. You know, it's always where you see green and diversity and abundance. And so you want the water to move slowly, you know, hopefully the surface water is not moving at all, so any nutrients settle out and stay in the land rather than being washed down, and you move it and touch as much of the land as possible. So this involves systems like swales and terraces and things like that, that, you know, work to restore resiliency. Now, my property is hilly. There's wetlands down below. You know, the idea is to slow soak and saturate the land to create much less transience in the water system. We don't have real wet flooding, and this is, I think, you know, the problem with the whole West. Our water management for a century has been, you know, if you go anywhere in the desert Southwest, you see the big concrete arroyos, and you know that they just, the water hits the land, it runs off, and they just try and get it out of there as fast as possible. So they have huge flooding and then totally dry periods. And the idea with permaculture is that you know, instill slowing the water, get it to go in the land, and you try and turn those cycles from these peaks and valleys of drought and flood and turn them into a much longer, sustainable cycle of resiliency and abundance. So that's been a real passion of mine, and that continues to this day, and I'm shaping this land to hopefully someday be an abundance of fruit trees and berries and all of those things that I won't eat anymore, but, you know, they're still usable for the animals and the livestock. I'm going to take a break here. Not take a break, but I'm going to unplug my refrigerator, if I can find the refrigerator plug. There it goes. I notice it makes noise on the microphone. Not as bad as Pearl, but that's okay. Pearl's cute. So, you know, I've been seeking that for years, or pursuing creating abundance here. And you can probably see a little bit, maybe not on this shot, but in the other shots, you can see my fruit trees, my new fruit trees, my little swale. And here, you know, that's south, that's north. And so all of my land I'm trying to, and the hill goes this way. So in all of my land, I'm trying to make these flat areas that are, you know, slow and soak and allow that water to soak in. And then they usually have a swale or a mound that faces this way, so I get a lot of thermal gain in the early parts of the spring. So these areas warm up first, they're up out of the water, so they're dry, the roots are not soaked. And those get warm very quickly. They have low thermal conductivity to the mass of the soil, so they can stay warm. They don't have, you know, it could be 50 degree soil here in March and 70 degree soil there on a sunny day. So I'm able to get things going early, and trees don't rot in, you know, with wet roots. And they're wonderful, abundant systems. And I've been learning, you know, for decades. So it's a real passion of mine. Maybe you can tell now that I'm starting to talk about it. So my days always have been full of shoveling and digging and now running the excavator. And of course, firewood is a big chore. clearing. You know, there's a lot of wood on my property. I haven't been clearing evergreens. It was logged many, many, many years ago, but many alders and willows and things like that that I manage to try and keep sun in the places I want sun and encourage the wetlands to become more wild. So fencing obviously is a big one, and now trying to install more animal systems so I can have more pastures that are separated into smaller pastures so I can practice more rotational grazing and more pasture forage stockpiling. I haven't been needing to hay my animals in the winter. I don't need to feed them because I'm able to partition the grass, let it grow into its dormant season. Carefully, you don't want it to go to seed, but you let it grow right up until it stops growing and hopefully hasn't gone to seed, so it maintains its nutritional quality in the forage. And then you can leave that there in my climate all winter long and move the animals through it piece by piece, and they always have food without needing to cut hay or feed hay or supplement at all. So these are the systems, and this is really my interest, is installing sustainable, resilient systems that are high input to install and eventually zero input to maintain in moving forward as a permanent installation. And that explains, if you guys follow me on Twitter, I'm a permanent homestead there, permsteader, and that's my goal, is to create a permanent homestead. I took the culture part out of permaculture because he's real big on community. And while I'm big on community, I don't have one. and of course, I'm working on that. But in terms of, you know, personally, I don't have a family or you know, the permaculture ideal would be to have a lot of different houses on this land and lots of people putting their hands in and working together. Of course, that'd be a lovely situation. But what I found is either I'm so strange or they are, but for whatever reason, finding, you know, enough like-minded people that you can get along with is a challenge. So that's neither here nor there. But at any rate, so a day of mine in the old days would have been quite a bit of digging and quite a bit of working with the plants and canning and seeding and sowing and weeding and all of those things. So my life has become exponentially simpler, not to mention cooking, not to mention, you know, shopping or any of the inputs that I need to bring in. You know, I no longer need for the garden. I no longer am buying seeds. I haven't bought any fruit trees. I probably will, but I used to spend, you know, I'd have seed catalogs everywhere this time of year. And I'd be pouring through them, getting them all coming in, organizing, making garden plans and calendars, and digging and sowing, and you know, and then all through the upcoming months, I would be staging different greens. I had my greenhouse that was full. I'd be tying up my tomatoes, and busy, 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 endless work doing that stuff. And those were good days. But now, you know, a day in my life now is so incredibly open to me in terms of being creative in other ways, in terms of pursuing other passions, and in terms of being simple. And when I was sick, you know, I really learned much more how to appreciate the moment. I always had Ram Dass's wonderful book, Be Here Now. I consider that a guide to life, right? If you haven't seen it, it's Be Here Now, written in a circle, and now be here, now be. And Ram Dass, I'm sure you're familiar with, or hopefully you are. And I really took his lessons to heart, you know, many decades ago, really. But it wasn't until I got really ill that I started to really be able to be present in the moment and appreciate right now, because I was so sick and I was scared. I didn't know what was coming in the future. I thought I had colon cancer. I couldn't get to the doctor. You guys know all that story. Or some kind of disease, and, you know, bloody GI tract and all those things that had me terrified. So my way of staying positive and calm was just to really work on being in the moment. I did a lot of meditation and just being here now. I'd say, what's wrong right now? And look around and just be so excited that I have an opportunity for the sun to come up and all those things. So as I've become more in tune with a simple life, I'm learning to be not bored, but just here, and learning to appreciate, you know, every moment. And whether I'm doing something or traveling, you know, in the old days, I would always be like, where? I got to go to the snow, or I got to go to the surf. And then as I moved that to here, I got to go dig in the garden. And now I just am happy to be and think. And of course, I'm still very active, but I became much better at being calm and in the moment and in myself. So a day now, you know, I get up and I'm ready to go. I don't need coffee. I don't need food. And I just usually start 5 days a week. I work out and I do a fairly simple at this point body weight, you know, calisthenics routine. And for me at 48, what I found, I went through many different iterations of this. I started with the recommended routine from Reddit's subreddit, Body Weight Fitness. And it's an excellent routine. And really all it is, it's a vertical push and a vertical pull and a horizontal push and a horizontal pull. And then a little bit of core work and a little bit of leg work, some squats and an L-sit and those kinds of things. So that gave me the foundation for a workout and for a way to kind of have a complete way to, you know, become fit in all ranges of motion. And as I progressed and learned, I've removed things and added things and worked on harder progressions and all that. But that's recommended, of course, for everybody. So it's pretty high volume. It has three sets of 8 to 12. And as I got into it and started to become stronger and started to work myself harder, I realized that was too much for me. I don't recover well from that much work. So I've simplified it. I do a split push, pull, legs. Monday is a push, Tuesday is a pull, Wednesday is legs. And then I start over and I do a push and a pull. And then I take 2 days off. So I only do 1 day legs. And I do a single set at this point of each exercise, but I often double up, you know, my vertical pull into two different variations and my horizontal pull into two different variations. So it comes out as more like two sets for each of those, but with different motions. So, and I'll, you know, you guys can see some of that here as I'll put it on the screen. So I get up and do my workout, and I do a pretty extensive warm up that involves planks and side planks and things like that, because I like the way that feels. I know it's not necessary. There are a lot of people who talk about just 10 minutes a day or 15 minutes a day of working out, but I want more, and it's important to me to stay flexible. A lot of those people often complain. They say, oh, you should only work out 15 minutes a day, and then they can't do pistol squats after trying for a year. And, you know, I believe a lot of that is because they're not also working their flexibility. In other words, the workout is focused only on strength, and, you know, you need to continue to work flexibility and strength through all range of motions and isometric holds and things like that that don't stress you in terms of recovery, but allow you to progress further in your other ways of working out. So I do work out more than a lot of folks my age who do the bare minimum, in my opinion. But it works for me, and I've tuned it to be quite successful. And I'm saying I do one set of every exercise. And that's now when I'm kind of in a maintenance phase, and I am still kind of bulking and cutting. You know, I've been small. I'm a very small person. I want to build muscle. And, you know, that's difficult when you're almost 50. It's easy to maintain, I think. I think a lot of the people who look at some of those simple routines as well might forget that, because a lot of the people who are proponents, you know, the loudest proponents of the single sets to failure and those things are people who have been working out for decades, if not their whole life. They didn't build their mass that way. You know, they might be my age, but they had been working out since they were 20. I started working out when I was 46. So, you know, I believe that if I'm going to build muscle, I might need to work a little harder. I could be wrong. Recovery is the most important thing. I agree with that. Part of that what those folks believe in. Inflammation is the enemy of gaining muscle, and it's the enemy of recovery. So it's absolutely crucial to not overwork. So that's a personal balance. But at any rate, yeah, I work out basically with single sets and in a pretty short amount of time. At this point, when I go into bulking stages and I'm eating 4 pounds of meat, I do work out for longer and do more sets. And I take longer breaks between them in terms of days, too, to allow myself more recovery. So at this point, I do my warm-up, which takes anywhere from 15 minutes to even sometimes half an hour, depending on what I'm doing. And then I work out for about another half an hour. So in the morning, I'm up, hopefully early, and I work out for about an hour. And then I usually, if I'm home and I don't have paying work somewhere else, if I have paying work here, I'll do it on the computer, or I'll try and sit down and be creative, work on my plans, answer my emails, do my eBay stuff, things like that for the first few hours of the day. And then I usually get outside, and this is year, time of year dependent, but of course, in the warmer weather, that might not be computer work. That might be get up and, well, when I was building the place, I was so busy, I'd get up and do my workout and get right to putting on my boots. I'd have my boots on at 7 and be outside after working out. And so, the morning is a productive time, is really the gist of it. And even this time of year, when I am working mostly inside, I do try and get outside. First, not first thing, but before I eat, I am usually outside at 9 or 10. And a lot of times that's just walking in the mailbox and taking my eBay stuff, or going and I have my shipping stuff set up down in my shop and boxing things up and walking around and taking care of the animals, doing a little bit of fencing, whatever the morning's chores are. Sometimes it's going to town and going to the dump and things like that. But I usually try and sort of get through most of my daily chores list before, before I eat, before 11 or so in the morning. And so I come home, back up here to the shack at usually 11 or noon or whatever it might be. And I relax and have my first meat cookies of the day, my pound of meat that it is now. And that usually leads to then a little more online time afterwards of being productive. And then depending on what's on my list and what I need to do, then the afternoon is usually very productive. And if I have big, high energy tasks, sometimes I'll switch that eating window to earlier. I'll do a little bit of work in the morning and I'll eat at 9 or 10, and I'll eat a little more, and then I can, stay out on the machine or in the tractor or fencing later into the evening. Now it's dark here. I'm at almost 50 degrees. I'm at 49 degrees north, so it's dark at it's getting later now. It's 5-ish now, but between 4 and 5. So I'm usually back in here by 4, and I do yoga every day at about 4, just a simple stretching. Since I already work out, I just do a simple half hour stretching, and it's as much about the meditation as it is about stretching. It's going back to that being in the moment. It just helps me sort of forget, or clear my mind and get out of my busy lists for the day, and I sort of break from my natural desire to need to get things done at that point, and I sort of settle into sitting around the fire and being here now and looking to kind of wind down for the day. So, in terms of a simple life, in the old days, those times would have been filled with cooking chores or canning chores and continuing with my list and going to bed with the things I didn't do in my head and all that. And so, in terms of a simple life, zero carb has been so profound for me because I get up and I have this long productive period where I'm really not hungry and I'm really able to focus on my work and I'm really productive, whether that's like I did yesterday, went into my customer's office and sat there in the engineering department and did planning and consulting until noon, past noon without any issues at all. Or whether it's being here and being able to fence and work in, on plantings or work with the animals. I got sheep shearing coming up in a few months here. That's kind of exciting. That's one of the animal chores that I always look forward to every year. That just kind of popped in my head. But yeah, it's become so simple. I don't, in the old days, I would cook a breakfast, right? And I would cook a lunch and I would cook a dinner. And those things usually involved different stages and cutting vegetables and, perhaps making beans in the pressure canner for that week. And, so life has become exponentially simple with regards to my eating schedule, with regards to my energy levels, with regards to, the way I'm able to clear my head at the end of the day and not have a lot of those tasks and chores riding on me. And it's been so profound. So simplifying my stuff, I talked about all the clothes I had that I have sold off. I have, I still probably have too many clothes, but they fit in my shack. I have my shirts and my pants and my work coveralls and but not much stuff. Very little. The kitchen is empty. There's almost nothing here, and I continually actually go, yeah, I don't really need that bowl, do I? And I take things out of here. I did bring a couple plates. They're just in storage, but I haven't used one for a long time. But in case anyone ever does come over. I've got a plate for somebody. I don't have, I only have a fork and a spoon and a knife, and I don't use any of them for the most part ever. And I don't even have a glass of water. I just have my water bottle, a stainless steel water bottle that I usually use. My water comes from a spring. I do have a reverse osmosis filter that, takes care of that. I do have a freezer on the back porch here that I keep my meat in. That's a chest freezer, so that's a pretty big thing, but you know, I'm just down to almost nothing in terms of what I need to survive in the kitchen and in terms of what I need to survive in clothes. I've got my records, is my one big sort of, last vestiges of my hoarding. And it's wonderful, you guys. I've been able to pursue other pursuits, you know, working on learning how to do CAD to get my stove plans out there, progressing with my stove stuff, making these videos, making my stove videos. If you haven't found my stove channel, it's Bro Audio, B-R-O-A-U-D-I-O. I made the title back when I was really into making music, and I just kept it. So I'm more prolific here at this point. My stove videos I do every, you know, few weeks or month, but there's quite a few there. And actually, if you go to that channel, you can see my old gardens and my old permaculture endeavors and sheep videos and calves being born and things like that. I always used to put those there, and I'll start putting those here now as I move forward. That channel has grown to such that I'm not able to put my personal stuff up there because almost all of the followers there are there for stoves. That's all they're there for, is the fire stuff. So if I put up, made the mistake of putting an aerial view a few years ago of my farm, and people are like, what is this? This isn't what I signed up for. Unsubscribe, you know? So that one became, it's no longer my personal channel. People have expectations there. So hopefully you guys will forgive me when I go into some sharing more personal things that don't have as much to do with zero carb. But I am hoping to keep this mostly focused around my experience with this way of eating, because it is so unique in our world for most people. Thankfully you all can relate. I sure appreciate you, because I sure felt like an alien until I found all you folks. But I will try and keep this channel at least relevant to zero carb in some way when I talk about things like my simple life. And to wrap up my simple life, I should talk about some of the things I don't have. And you know, these weren't sacrifices for me. This is just who I am. So I hear a lot of people who are seeking a simple life and they give up social media and things like that. And I just never had those things. So 2002, I quit my sales rep job in the snowboard industry, and I symbolically shot my cell phone. And I never got another one. So it's 2018 now, and I haven't had a mobile phone since 2002. So yeah, that's kind of weird, but it's pretty simple. And I also never made a Facebook page. I never made a MySpace page, so I never made the transition to Facebook from MySpace. And that was a function of having those huge lists of contacts from my snowboard world. You know, I had been a sales rep in 7 states in the Rockies, and then a sales rep for another 7 years in the Northwest in another 5 states. And I had thousands and thousands and thousands of contacts and great people. I enjoyed them so much, but I was terrified of a Facebook page and all of those people being in my contacts, and I never made it. So I just never did it. So I don't have Facebook. I don't have a mobile phone. I have a landline. You know, my internet comes in over DSL, so it's slow. And you know, the phone really never rings at this point. I don't really use it much. Talk to my folks and my brother and my sister. And I did reach out last night. You guys will be happy to hear this. That's because this is one of the things I'm working on doing better, as I reached out to my old friend. I referred to her already, the woman I fell in love with here the first time, who I said was the wrong person. She's not the wrong person. She's wonderful. She's, at the time, it was wrong. And she, you know, chose someone else over me repeatedly during those times. That was what was so hurtful. But, you know, she made mistakes. She made mistakes just like I do. So, but we're very close. And so I called her last night and we had a great long conversation. She's raising her 2 kids and on her own, and we really get along well. And so you know, I don't reach out to people very often, but I'm trying to do better. And it felt great, by the way, to have that connection, have a friend to talk to. So I'll do better at that in the future. But yeah, that's my simple life in the nutshell, you guys. I get up, I work out, I work on my stuff, I try and be creative, I go make money if I need to in the boat shops, my energy is great. You don't find me on Facebook, I'm not on the cell phone, I have no intention of it either. I don't have a use for a cell phone, to be honest. It's not a sacrifice. I don't really leave the house. If I do now, it's just going from here to one of my customer shops that are close by. I don't have anyone to call. I don't have anyone to check in with. I'm not against a cell phone. If I had someone in my life that wanted to know where I was, I would get one. I have bought a track phone on times when I've been traveling, so I use those. But I just have no need for one. And when I simplified my bills and simplified all my inputs here, I just, you know, have found those things are not something that are useful to me. So pretty simple life. I'm usually in bed by often before 9, as silly as that sounds, but it's because, you know, I'm completely exposed to all the light here. This room is all windows for the most part, except for the wall of records, which was intentional. I like to live very close to the cycles. I always know what the tide's doing. As a surfer, there's surf right down at the end of my road. I always know, you know, what the seasons are and what the weather is doing. And that, you know, still ties into my years and years of being an expert gardener. I still go out there and feel the soil all the time. And so I tend to sleep with those cycles too. I do feel it's important. And I do feel it's part of our health to be part of, you know, our good health to be tied in with this, our circadian rhythms and the cycles of nature. And so I tend to wake up these days before the sun, but as the year progresses with the sun, even in the summer, that's kind of rough because it's 4 a.m. here or even earlier, but I just naturally kind of wake up then. And then, you know, in the summer I'm in bed before dark actually usually. But nowadays I'm in bed by 8 or 8:30. And yeah, it's pretty simple, you guys. So I live here, as you guys know, with my 3 dogs, Waylon the Chihuahua and Rue Dog, the Northwest Farm Terrier, and Pearl the Great Pier, who's out there barking up a storm. And I've got chickens still and sheep and cows. I've got 2 cows that are hopefully pregnant and 1 little bull who jumps every fence around here when there's no food. He can hurdle, you know, as high as I am just about without a problem. And I've got 2 sheep, and I told you I lost 4 to cougars. I think I told you that. We have a lot of wildlife predation here. My place backs up to state lands, that backs up to national forest, and that backs up to the Olympic National Park. So I've got nothing between me and, you know, a huge wilderness. There's 1 road that goes between me and them that they have to cross in the next valley over. But right behind me, there's just a mountain that's all state land, so I can walk up into the woods. And, you know, I do often. I used to go collecting chanterelles. I actually just threw out all my old last dried stash 2 days ago when I went to the dump. And so I spend a lot of time in the woods and walking around, and I go down to the beach and get in touch with the tides. And those things, you know, are part of my simple life. So that's going to wrap it up, I think, for today. I'm going to hopefully sit down now and lay a bunch of photos over this that show you guys all these things I'm talking about. So maybe you won't see me with my wet morning hair and all that for much of this. But it's so wonderful, you guys, to have you along, to have your support. And I'll keep these coming. Like I said, you know, these ones keep being long because you guys are asking me and giving me things to talk about. But hopefully at some point here, I'm going to sort of transition more into a journal format where I'm giving you kind of the weekly updates. Frankly, these long ones are a lot of work for me because my internet is so slow. The last one took almost 30 hours to upload. And it kind of stops me from doing a lot of other stuff while that's happening. So hopefully I'll shorten them up a little bit. And I tried to make this one still a podcast. You know, it's going to be a lot of photos, I hope, but hopefully it'll still be somewhat interesting for those of you who are just only listening. And I can't thank you enough for doing that. So thank you, my friends. Thank you so much. I cannot tell you again how much I appreciate it. And I hope that this is reaching you at a time where you need to hear it and maybe giving you some insights or maybe some direction or some inspiration or maybe some of what not to do. And yeah, I keep moving forward, I keep progressing, and a lot of that is in large part to your support. So thanks so much, everybody. Okay, let me know what else we can do, what else I can share, what else we, when I say we, I mean you guys and me, what we can do together to move us all forward. And a side note, I never do this, but we all are all of us small YouTube creators just got an email last week from YouTube that they're going to cut these channels as YouTube partners or whatever due to new regulations or rules. They said they're trying to protect the big money makers, whatever sense that makes. But if you can, if I can get 1,000 subscribers, I don't think it's going to happen, but if I can get 1,000 subscribers by February 20th, then I can keep, the channel's going to stay going, but it just might be harder to find, is what my fear is. If I'm not a YouTube partner, they won't have it on the front page. You'll search it and it'll be way down on the search list because they always promote the YouTube partners first. So if you can spread the word, please, and help me try and hit that 1,000 subscribers. I wasn't going to ask about that, but now that I'm sitting here and thinking about it, why not, right? I'll just ask you guys for that help because it would make a difference to me. At the end of the year, that might be $100 for me or something like that. It'll help me pay for the internet and keep this thing alive. So doesn't matter either way. I appreciate your guys' support. I'm not here to ask for anything, but if you can click that button without too much trouble, or have someone else do it, and or hit watch and go to work and let my video run to get me. I need to have a certain amount of watch minutes too before that February 20th date. If I have 1,000 subscribers, I'll probably just naturally hit it. But it doesn't matter if I hit that or not. I just thought I'd mention it because it's on my mind that they sent out that email, and I do think it will affect how this channel, how many people it can reach. And like I say, my biggest goal is to reach the most people so that hopefully someone hears this at a time when they really need it, when they're scared or seeking, like I was. And I really had a hard time finding information. Okay, that's enough. Boy, I talk a lot, don't I? So much my voice is, my throat's going crazy. Okay, I'm going to be back to work this week. In the boats, squeezing crimpers, and so next week I think I'll check in with you guys and let you know how physical work is going, and do let me know what else I can share with you. Okay, guys, thanks so much for watching, and thanks for all your support. See you next time.